From beanies to carry bags and from shoes to caps, browse our shop now at tntradio.live. You're listening to the No Fly Zone with Greg Mabry on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Hello, friends. Welcome once again back to the No Fly Zone. I'm your host, Greg Mabry. My guest today is someone with whom I do feel a strong affinity. We've both been big lovers of popular music for many years and admirers of many of the artists and performers who've made that music. At the same time, we've experienced a great awakening in more recent times concerning our individual perceptions of how the world really works, who's pulling the levers, and to what ends they are pulling those levers. And this is something we here at TNT pride ourselves on keeping tabs on, of course. My own journey is one I've sort of discussed in my writing on Substack and touched on in this program, of course, but my guest's epiphany was derived from his experience working mainly in the music and entertainment industry. And it's this background that we're going to be looking at today. Now, this industry, to most people, represents a source of benign fun, but beneath the glitzy veneer, though, lies the shocking truth of who really controls this business, what goes down in it, and the deeply insidious agendas which they're serving. Now, if any of you listeners actually watched or even saw snippets of the recent Grammy Awards, you will understand what I'm talking about there. There was one of the big routines in the Grammy Awards ceremony was a satanic-flavoured song and dance routine. If any of you saw even snippets of that, you'll understand that something seriously missed with this business. And it's not coincidental that few major music, film, entertainment industry acts, and including even sporting stars and performers, stepped up and stepped out against the COVID agenda. In the music business, there were a couple of Van Morrison, Eric Clapton, and Ian Brown of the Stone Roses, were a few that I know of personally. There may have been one or two others. But my guest today is the man to talk to on this. He's Mark Devlin. He's a long-standing music DJ and music journalist, author, and a public speaker. His Music Truth or Musical Truth trilogy makes for compelling, if unsettling, reading. There's much in these volumes to chow down on, I can assure you, because I've just finished the first two. And there's much in there for all interest groups within and across what I would call the inquiring mind demographic. Of course, that is very much, I believe, our demographic here on TNT, the inquiring mind demographic. And certainly Mark Devlin has done his homework. The title notwithstanding, and as unlikely as it might appear to some, the narrative presents the music and entertainment industry, including, as I mentioned or hinted at earlier on, the sporting and even the fashion business and other related industries, as a microcosm for understanding so much more about what's happening in our world more broadly, the sorts of things that we cover here on TNT. And this includes events and developments that are happening in plain sight and, of course, plenty that are not. Mark Devlin, welcome to the No Fly Zone.
What's going on, Greg? Good to be with you.
Yeah, thank you for your time. I know that you're a very busy man and very pleased and to have you on the program. Mark, let's get right into it. Your background, and personal and professional, let's give us a little bit of an insight into that, and particularly your moment of truth. What was it that really sort of made you understand, that there was something wrong in a business that you had devoted, much of your professional life to?
Sure. Well, my background is as a club and radio DJ. So I did that professionally for about 20 years. Did a couple of jobs before that, but they were pretty boring. So I got started in a radio station in Oxford, which is my city of birth, in 1990. I find it quite ironic that I come from Oxford, given that that's Illuminati Central in England. That's where all the elite types go to get all their education. But I think the universe is, given a little sense of irony there. So I got started as a radio DJ, worked for a few radio stations, and started to make a bit of a name for myself on the scene. I was playing effectively black dance music, so it was like R&B, soul, hip-hop, reggae, soulful house, that sort of thing. And I got a lot of club bookings as well during that time. So I was fortunate enough to come to Australia 6 times to do mini tours, and I played all over the world, and everything was all good up until round about 2007, 2008. And in that period, I started to have some big questions about what was really going on in the world. Those questions had really always been there in the back of my mind. Even as a kid, I questioned various things, such as why Britain has a royal family. That's something from a very young age that really sort of stuck in my craw, you know. I had a problem with that. So around about 2007, I started researching a few authors. It was David Icke's books that got me started in the game. And I found that they answered a lot of the questions that I'd had up to that point, such as who really controls governments, who really controls all these institutions that affect our regular daily lives, and even the bigger questions, the spiritual ones, such as what is this life? What are we doing here? You know, what's the purpose of all of this? So I've covered those topics over the years. But what I really wanted to know is how this control system that I'd become aware of played out in the music business, which I'd been a part of. And after a few years of researching it and coming up with some very shocking stuff, I decided the best way to communicate what I'd found, because it's not enough just to gather this knowledge and then sit on it yourself. You take on a responsibility for sharing it as widely as you can. And I thought the most effective way of doing that would be to write a book. I'd written a book before, so it's almost as if everything I'd done up to that point was grooming and preparing me for what I'm doing now. So I'd done all these radio shows, I'd toured all over the place as a DJ, and I'd written a book in 2007, which was called Tales from the Flip Side, and it was like funny stories from the DJ game. But it got me used to the process of self-publishing a book. So the result was my first musical truth book, which contained about 5 years worth of research, and that contained everything I'd discovered up to that point, basically, about the true nature of the music industry. And that book came out in early 2016, and it's been nonstop since then.
Yeah, it's interesting. I came across your work via Dave McGowan's book, the book on the 60s, mainly the 60s and the 70s book, where he exposed a lot of the MK Ultra mind control aspects and the connections that many of the big stars of the 60s and 70s, many of the connections that they actually had with the military industrial complex and, you know, various other sort of aspects of the deep state, as we call it. Dave McGowan's work was fantastic. I thought he's written some terrific stuff, but you've taken it much further than I think Dave McGowan has done, haven't you?
Well, a lot of people are kind enough to tell me that I've kind of taken the baton from Dave and run with it, and I suppose I have in many ways. His style of research was pretty groundbreaking, and it was very simple because all Dave did was take information that was there in the public domain in mainstream sources and just piece it all together. And it's not until you put it all together that the patterns start to form. So it's like a giant jigsaw puzzle. And his interest got sparked in that mid to late 60s counterculture scene coming out of Laurel Canyon in Los Angeles. And he had all kinds of questions about the backgrounds of these influential musicians. And what he found was, almost without exception, connections into the world of the military, military intelligence, and various expressions of the government. And this is coming from the parents of these prominent artists who shaped and molded that scene. So Dave didn't really come out with a final conclusion, but I think anyone who's read that book will come away from it concluding for themselves that that entire scene was military grade and was pushing governmental agendas. And so if that's the case for that one particular scene in that one particular period and area, then it's probably the case for the entire music business in every way that it expresses itself. And my personal conclusion is that that's absolutely the case. So I sort of ran with Dave McGowan's style of research, looking into the backgrounds of many of these musicians, looking into the connections of many of the major record labels. And you do find endless connections into the world of the military. And unfortunately, where you find the military, mind control is not far behind. And then you have dark occult satanic ritual. And unfortunately, you get pedophilia thrown into the mix as well.
Yeah.
And this will shock people when they hear it for the first time, when they hear the suggestion that all of this is connected to popular music and entertainment, because it's supposed to be all about having a bit of fun, letting your hair down, yep, enjoying yourself.
Exactly.
But that's the genius of getting these agendas done through entertainment, because people's guard is down and they're not expecting to have their thoughts and perceptions shaped and molded for them. But that's exactly how societal mind control works.
The MK Ultra program that was initiated by the CIA, of course, one of the big things with that, of course, was the use of drugs, and particularly LSD, you know, with Timothy Leary and all of that sort of stuff that came out around about that time. Tell us a little bit about MK Ultra and the whole drug scene of the 60s and how that kind of, you know, fed into what came later.
So MK Ultra was this very far-reaching mind control program which was perfected by the CIA, and it officially ran from 1953 to 1973. And we're told that in 73 it was decommissioned, and the CIA came out and said, we're not doing these experiments anymore. They admitted to it, but they said that's the end of it. I'm not buying that at all. If anything, it's been ramped
never did
up
either.
Big time.
No.
It's been ramped up big time since the 70s. But officially, it involved experimentation with mind-altering drugs, specifically LSD. It involved things like sensory deprivation, electroshock treatment, putting people into induced comas. And it was there to study the effects of the mind. And in the early days, we were told in that Cold War era, it was used to get remote viewers who were able to have out-of-body experiences and report on what they had seen in remote locations for sort of military spy activities. It was also used to create Manchurian Candidate-style assassins who would go out and perform missions. So, you know, a great example of that would be Mark Chapman, who's the guy who's said to have shot John Lennon in a mind-controlled state. And then also MKUltra plays out into the entertainment business in terms of many prominent entertainers being mind controlled themselves. So this is Hollywood actors, it's TV stars, it's musicians, many famous names, more than people would ever be able to believe, but there's evidence to back it up, would have been subject to trauma-based mind control from early childhood. Often this is down to the families that they come out of, because family bloodlines and ancestry is very important to this story. But some of them would just be unfortunate enough to have stumbled into the industry and been subject to this. And the reason they do it in entertainment is so that they have their assets completely on script. And if they're required to push agendas, they can be programmed to do so without any sort of conscious thought on their part. They effectively just become mind-controlled automatons. So that's another way that MKUltra expresses itself. And it also expresses itself societally in terms of mass mind control. And that's done through television. That comes through the flicker rate when you watch TV, which puts people into a hypnotic state. So they're very suggestible in terms of their subliminal mind. That's how advertising works. And also it's done through movies and through music, recorded music, and also live shows. You mentioned the Grammys there. We had the performance with Sam Smith as part of that event. And it was a blatant satanic ritual. He's dressed up as the devil and he's doing a song called Unholy. How much more blatant can it get?
It does. Mark, we'll come back to that in a moment. We're going to go for a quick break, but very keen to continue this conversation. You're listening to the No Fly Zone. I'm Greg Mabry. My guest today is Mark Devlin. We are talking about the insidious agenda that exists in the music and entertainment industry. We'll be back shortly after this break.
For Voye Morich on TNT Radio.
Speaking of Mexico, Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene has come out today and said, I'm proud to co-sponsor Dan Crenshaw's legislation to declare war on the Mexican cartels. We must authorize the use of military force to eliminate the thugs who are smuggling drugs and illegal aliens across our southern border, leading to crime and murder of Americans, while cartel members wait for their fate to be sealed by our great military. We will put a hit on their bank accounts by sanctioning any government that supports or allows cartels to operate. Yada, yada, there's war going on that affects every single American, but it's not in Ukraine or the Middle East. It's on our southern border. And what concerns me is when she says, while cartel members wait for their fate to be sealed by our great military. Yeah, that's frightening because this is like uncharted territory where we're headed. U.S. Special Forces heading into Mexico. I mean, Peter Zeihan said this is going to become Afghanistan. So, wow. Yeah. I suppose we were here, you know, like a century ago. So we just keep revisiting history on all fronts.
For Voye Morich on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Every time you hop on your motorbike, who else is coming with you? Well, there's your girlfriend.
Hey, babe.
Your mum.
Hi, love.
Your dad.
Hey, shuffle closer, will you?
Your mates.
Hey, buddy.
How you going? Oh,
well, there we go.
Not to mention your dreams, your plans, and your future. So next time you're on your motorbike, ride safely. Because there's a lot riding on it. A message brought to you by the Government of South Australia.
If you're talking about it...
For a strong America. For a proud America. I am running for President of the United States of America.
We're talking about it. Today's News Talk Radio. TNT.
Hello, folks. Thanks for rejoining us. I'm speaking today with Mark Devlin, who is talking about his research that he's taken or done in the music and entertainment industry. Mark, before we get back on to what we were speaking about before the break, you're actually planning an Australian tour at the end of this year in November. Can you tell us a little bit about that and how people can actually support your aims of coming down here and speaking about your findings?
To Australia six times as a DJ between 2003 and 2009. That was the last time I was there, so I figured it was high time I came back. And what I really wanted to do is something different this time, a speaking tour, because I do a lot of gigs here in the UK. I've got one just later today, where I go out and present aspects of my research to a live audience. And I had one lined up for Australia in March 2020. So I was all set to come out there and I was going to be doing gigs in Sydney, Melbourne and Perth. And I think we all know how that panned out in March 2020, what happened that very month. It was appalling timing on my part because if I'd scheduled the tour for a week earlier, I would have been able to do it and get out of Australia safely. But of course, we know what happened that month. So I've wanted to come back ever since. But I had to wait for a situation where I was able to travel internationally without any of the restrictions that we all know about. And thankfully, Australia did open its borders just recently to foreigners such as myself. The United States is still blocking people from coming in unless they've taken the arm spear. But at the moment, you can still get into Australia. So I'm banking on that still being the case for November. And I'm setting up a mini speaking tour, which is going to take in four dates. So I'm going to be hitting Melbourne, Sydney, Perth, and Brisbane. Not necessarily in that order, but those are the four cities. And I want to title it Music's Military and Mind Control Connections. It will be aspects of my research from each of my Musical Truth books. It'll be two-part presentations for each gig, and I'll be presenting a lot of information. So I would love it if people in those cities or close to those cities could come along, support the events, and get to hear some of this information. There's nothing like delivering it to a live audience. It really is the best way to make a connection.
Absolutely. And I'd like to just advise listeners, Mark is running a crowdfunding campaign to assist him financially. His aims on these speaking tours is not to make money. It's about getting the message out there. But of course, you know, everybody, it costs to be an activist and to get out there and get your message out there. And Mark's crowdfunding campaign. Mark, can you give us some details on that campaign and where people can actually go and support that?
Sure. I do hate asking for money because I'm not in this game to make money. I don't think any of us are the genuine ones. We just want to get truth out there. But as you say, we're operating in this reality and we need to be able to cover our operating costs. And for Absolutely. Me to get out to Australia is going to be fairly expensive. I'm only asking for my international flights to be covered. So the internal flights and my hotels and all that sort of stuff, I'm going to cover myself. But to get myself into Australia on a direct flight from London to Perth and then back out again is coming in at around about £4,500. So that's the figure that I'm trying to cover just so that I can get myself into Australia. And so I've got a crowdfunder and people are able to pitch in with that if they choose. And so if anyone's found value in my work and would like to come along to one of these gigs and they're able to assist me to just cover those costs, anything they can chip in would be gratefully appreciated.
Great. We'll mention those details again towards the end of the broadcast. We'll move on a little bit here. And I do encourage people to follow up Mark's work on his websites. He has a YouTube channel and we'll give a little bit more information about where people can find out more information about Mark Devlin's work shortly, including information, of course, about the crowdfunder. Mark, before we went to the break, we were talking about things like, you know, subliminal messaging, you know, social engineering, predictive programming, all of that sort of stuff that takes place. We've seen, obviously, you know, a lot of this type of stuff that, you know, around the COVID, the emergence of the COVID pandemic, etc. I can recall a number of films, and I wrote about this in one of my essays, how COVID itself was, you know, a part of a predictive programming agenda that goes back, you can trace it back actually about 20 to 25 years ago. So, and this is not the only thing that, you know, that we see in popular culture in terms of what the powers that be tell us what they're going to be doing. Can you give us a little bit more background on predictive programming, the subliminal messaging, you know, the sort of social engineering that goes on in and around the entertainment and music business?
Yeah, so the idea behind predictive programming is that an event which is known to be coming, depictions of it are placed into popular culture vehicles in the years and even decades leading up to that event. So it goes into Hollywood movies, it goes into TV shows, it goes into cartoons, it goes into ads, it goes into music videos, and it goes into live music performances. A classic example would be what happened on 9/11. And in my first Musical Truth book, I've got a chapter where I list the many, many depictions of the events of September 11th, which were in movies and TV shows leading up to that event. And it was no different with COVID, as you say. And in Musical Truth 3, my most recent book, I list a whole bunch of movies and TV shows which contained aspects of the COVID agenda placed right there in so-called entertainment. I mean, a classic example would be this episode of The Dead Zone, which is a TV show that ran in America based on some stories by Stephen King. Right. Yep. So there's this one particular episode from 2005 which depicts the outbreak of a deadly virus. It affects society. It comes out of China. It gets spread around the world by air travel. Governments have to go into lockstep emergency measures, all in conjunction with each other. They have to do lockdowns, social distancing, the wearing of masks, and the only possible way out of it is to develop a vaccine that everyone has to take to get back to normal. Does that sound familiar at all? And
absolutely,
so these ideas.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right. So these ideas go into the narratives of these movies and TV shows and stuff and music videos, as I say. The idea behind it is threefold, actually. One is to create a familiarity with the event so that when the mainstream news comes on and says this is what's happening, in the back of the subliminal mind of the viewing public, there's already a familiarity with the narrative because they've heard it before. Then there's an energetic connection which is made between the audience watching something like a movie or one of these big music concerts and those performing it. And if a depiction of an event which the controllers wish to bring around is depicted in this popular culture vehicle, then the energy that's fed to it through the attention of the viewing public can actually help to empower that event to come into being. This is the dynamic of manifestation. And so that's reason two. And the third reason, and I feel the main reason why they communicate what they wish to do, is down to their comprehension of natural law and consequentialism and how that all plays out. So there are consequences for our actions in the law of cause and effect. Some people refer to it as karma. And we are supposed to do no harm under the non-aggression principle of natural law. These are dynamics which are built into the very fabric of this reality. And they feel they can cheat their way around this do no harm law by communicating to us what they plan to do through these movies and TV shows and such. Now, the flaw here is that the viewing public doesn't realize that it's being told what's actually going to happen in the real world through a movie. They think it's just harmless entertainment. But as far as the controllers are concerned, they've communicated what they plan to do. And if we then voice no objection, they take that as our tacit consent or approval for what they plan to do. They go right ahead and do it. And as far as they're concerned, they've caused no harm because we've not said no. That's the reason why predictive programming plays out. And it's used in entertainment because, as I was saying earlier, nobody's expecting to be mind controlled and having their entire worldview shaped and molded for them by popular culture, when what they think is happening is that it's just all harmless fun and entertainment and something good to do with their leisure time. So it's genius the way they get it done.
Look, you've got to dip your lid to them, as you say. It is. It's evil genius, but nonetheless, it's evil. It's genius for sure. I mean, I encountered your work, and even before Dave McGowan's book, which led me to you, I was aware to some degree of these kinds of machinations in the music industry. I worked in the music industry for a short period of time. Not that I can actually say that I witnessed any of this then, and even if I might have witnessed it, I don't think I would have attached any kind of significance to it at that point in time. My kind of awakening period come much later. But all up, even I was just astounded after reading Dave McGowan's book, and then I've ploughed through your first two volumes of Musical Truth over the last couple of weeks. And I honestly could not put the books down, Mark. I mean, they were too classic cliche. They were real page turners. It was partly because I had a fascination for the music and the entertainment industry like yourself. And many of those people that you mentioned, you know, were people that I admired greatly. But some of the revelations that came out just really shook me to the core. And sure. I didn't go into it naively to begin with. I went into it expecting a few shocks, but I got a hell of a lot more than I expected, that's for sure. And I guess probably one of the things that that really, shocks me. And I had a guest on my program about 6 or 7 weeks ago, a fellow, I don't know if you're aware of him. His name is Joachim Hagopian. And he wrote a very, I'll send you the links later on, but Joachim looked in the whole satanic symbolism, occult background and the pedophilia in the entertainment industry. He actually looked at it right across the board, but he devoted a large chapter of this opus. In fact, it was nearly a 2,000-page book. It's actually available online for anybody that wants to read it. And his take on the whole pedophilia and the satanic ritual abuse and the occult influences that take place right across the power elites. As I said, he devoted a significant chapter to the entertainment industry. Of course, name-checking many times our friend and yours, Jimmy Savile, of course, being one of the prime examples of somebody who had this prominent sort of profile in society. And it turned out that he was, he was engaged in all sorts of horrific activities. Just talking about not just Jimmy Savile particularly, but the whole occult satanic thing.
Let's not mention Rolf Harris, eh?
Oh, yes, of course, our Rolfie. he's actually a local boy. He comes from WA. In fact, the local council from his hometown, they actually dismantled his statue a few years back when he went to jail, and it all came about. Yeah. And that's an interesting one there as well. If you'd said to anybody in Australia, before this came to light, if you'd said, Rolf Harris is a child molester, people would sort of think, no, this is crazy.
Exactly.
And Joachim, in his book, goes into the Rolf Harris and the Jimmy Savile connections in great detail, in enormous detail, and it's well worthwhile following up his work. He's done some tremendous work in this area. But your own experience, focusing particularly on the music and entertainment industry, give us your take on the whole satanic, occult and pedophilia thing, the satanic ritual abuse. And within that, of course, too, we've got child sex trafficking, which takes place as well, which I believe the music industry itself or the entertainment industry would be prime hunting grounds for people involved in this business.
Yeah, well, people are shocked when they hear these suggestions connected to music. You mention demonic possession, you mention pedophilia, you mention satanic ritual, and people are like, wait, what? In music? Nah, that can't be true. But I've gone to great lengths in my book, as you kindly state, and it sounds like Joachim has as well, to show many examples of where these practices crop up in the music industry and how some of the very prominent names in the industry are involved in it. These are, unfortunately, practices which take place. One resource which was very useful to me in the early days of my research was the website Vigilant Citizen, which is still going.
Yes, sir. Yeah.
And that site specialized in symbolism and showing how occult symbolic communication takes place within entertainment. And I learned to spot many signs and symbols which pertain to trauma-based mind control, satanic ritual abuse, and other satanic ritual practices. And when you know
Mark,
what you're looking
there, we've got to go to a break. We have to go to a break. We'll come back very shortly. You're listening to the No Fly Zone. I'm Greg Mabry. We're speaking with Mark Devlin. We'll be back shortly after this break.
De-weaponizing weather with reality and perspective.
It really is getting hard to believe the stuff that comes out today. I'm not going to even call it disinformation. I'll call it half information. The Washington Post, it used to be a great paper. It really did. I mean, I had a friend that worked for the Washington Post back in the 80s, and we would talk about their editorial board and how they always try to present the other side. But once again, the Washington Post is at it. They say the reason your allergies are getting worse in the United States is because of climate change, because springs are coming earlier. That is total unmitigated nonsense. All right. The last 15 years, there's been no significant change in U.S. March and April temperatures. In addition, it's amazing. We had a warm February in the United States. Guess what? The 5-day period running up to the first day of spring, one of the coldest on records, especially in the deep South. they don't even bother looking. It's the same story over and over and over again. Well, guess what? Maybe there are other reasons why allergies are worse, like what you're eating, what you're drinking, your general health. But no, it's got to be blamed on climate change. This is TNT Climate and Weather Watchdog meteorologist Joe Bastardi asking you to enjoy the weather. It's the only weather you got.
It's not a texting the wife seat, a scrolling through your playlist seat, or a taking a call that could be your next job seat.
Hello, Mike's Plumbing.
It's not a replying to the boss's email seat, or a school letting you know about your sick kid seat. It's a driver's seat. If there's someone or something that needs your attention and it can't wait, pull over first, because no one's driving if you're distracted. A message from the Government of South Australia.
This is the No Fly Zone with Greg Maybury on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Hello, listeners. Welcome back to the No-Fly Zone. I'm speaking today with Mark Devlin, whose background in the music and entertainment industry gives us some shocking insights into what actually goes on inside this industry. Mark, before we went to the break, we were talking about the occult, satanic ritual abuse, pedophilia, child sex trafficking aspects of the industry. Continue on from where you were talking about that before.
Sure. Well, I never experienced any of this stuff firsthand. I mean, I was never really within the industry. As a DJ, I was sort of on the periphery of it. Yeah. So all of this stuff was shocking to me when I first discovered it. But you very quickly get used to it because you find it everywhere. And then the responsibility becomes communicating it to other people so that they can know what's really being done and how they're being mind controlled and how subliminal signaling is coming through popular culture and entertainment. And this is why it's so important to provide citations for your claims, because when you come out with a claim like, as you say, many years ago, if you'd stated that Rolf Harris was a child molester, people would have said, you're crazy. You don't know what you're talking about. Same thing with Jimmy Savile. Jimmy Savile was held up as a national treasure in the UK. And it wasn't until a year after he died that the true nature of what he was really into came out. But if you'd made that suggestion several years earlier, people would have dismissed you as a nutter. But now we have the evidence. And so my books are full of references and resources, and I will tell you where I got the information from. So if I come out with a claim like such and such a famous artist is mind controlled or has been subject to satanic ritual abuse, I'll provide the citation, whether it was a quote from an interview, whether it's a statement that somebody made, whether it's in some document, whether it's an excerpt from a book. Very important to do that. So that is what these institutions are used for. Unfortunately, it's all very dark, it's all very devastating, and it's very difficult for people to come to terms with this stuff when they hear it for the first time. But, you know, you either want the truth or you don't. And I find it's very liberating, actually, to uncover this stuff, because I don't want to be a mug. I don't want to be duped. I don't want to follow false heroes. I would rather know the truth about these people if it's there to be discovered. And so that's been the nature of all my work for the past several years. It's become a full-time job now, and I just seem to have settled into this niche of being that guy that is out there exposing the music business. And I can't really imagine doing anything else now.
Well, that's the reason I wanted you on the show, because you, for me, were that guy. Unfortunately, Dave McGowan, who we alluded to earlier on, Dave McGowan died recently and apparently under sort of suspicious circumstances. Well, and he would have
McGowan
been a terrific
died
fellow
on the 20- Yeah, McGowan died on the 22nd of November, which is the anniversary of the Kennedy assassination.
That's correct.
And it's the same date on which Michael Hutchence died in 1997. So, it's a very
again,
auspicious
under-
date.
Absolutely. And there's some uncanny similarities between Michael Hutchence passing and a few other major rock and pop stars, weren't there?
Absolutely. And when I come out to do this Australian speaking tour, I'm going to be doing a section on some Australian artists. So there'll be a bit on Rolf Harris. There'll be quite a bit on Michael Hutchence, a bit on Nick Cave, a bit on Kylie Minogue. I want to sort of gear it towards some Australian artists because there's a lot to know there.
Oh, okay. That I will find very interesting. You mentioned Nick Cave, who's always been one of my, somebody that I've always held up as an exemplar of what's great about the music. But many others as well, too. But we're talking again. One of the things that I mentioned or saw you mention in your book, that in your talks and your lectures, one of the most common questions you get is about musical frequency and how that was changed back under the international standards arrangement quite a few years back, and the connections between musical frequencies and our bodies and our body chemistry and all of that sort of thing, and mind control and how that sort of plays into psychological operations that are undertaken via the music business and people involved in the music business. Can you tell us a little bit about the science and the agenda behind this?
Yeah, so there was first an attempt to change the standard tuning pitch for musical instruments in 1917 under these international standards. And up to that point, the main frequency that had been used to tune the A note was 440 hertz. So A is tuned to that, and all the other notes sort of fall in line proportionally with it. And 440,
that's the concert pitch.
Exactly. That's the one that's been used for many decades.
Yeah.
Prior to that, the one that had been used primarily was 432 hertz. And so the attempt was to change it over to 440. And 432 hertz is said to be the harmonic frequency, which resonates with the human body, with the rhythms of nature, of the earth. It's basically a really good pitch, a really good frequency to be in tune with, and it sits very well with the human body and mind. 440, by contrast, is anything but. 440 produces discordance, dissonance. It's actually very disturbing and agitating to listen to music which has been pitched to 440. So little surprise that the controllers have seen to it that most recorded music now, for many decades actually, has been pitched to 440. So the first attempt to introduce this was in 1917, and it didn't really take hold. And they came back and had another go towards the tail end of the Second World War, 1940s, and that's when the international standard came in. And it all occurred at the hands of the Rockefeller Foundation. Yeah, that is a family name which crops up endlessly in my research.
The ubiquitous Rockefellers.
Exactly. So a lot of conscious musicians who know about this stuff pitch their music to 432 because they want it to have that uplifting sort of healing effect on the listener. But most of the corporate stuff that you listen to, most of what's played on mainstream radio, is going to be pitched to 440. And it's the same thing with many live concerts in terms of how the music is pitched. So it does have an effect on the human mind and body and emotional state, but it's all on an unseen level. So nobody's aware that it's actually going on. And then you've got the fact that music today is produced digitally, electronically. Yeah. And within that, you can strip in all kinds of frequencies and other harmful elements that people won't hear. It's not audible, but it's there in the recording. And because it's of a digital nature, it can be stripped in with nobody noticing. So it's the same way that you can strip out audio. When you convert a large WAV file to an MP3, you're taking out elements of the recording, but nobody notices that they're missing. So if that process can happen, then the reverse can, which is you can strip in stuff and nobody knows it's there. And a lot of so-called music now, particularly what passes for urban, so-called R&B and hip-hop now.
This was your main area anyway, wasn't it? urban in the black 90s, music and rap this, and...
That's right. This is the stuff I played when I got started in the 90s, but it was very different then. You know, the music was very different to what's being pumped out now. And I actually can't stand to listen to it now. If I'm around that stuff, unfortunately, my 14-year-old daughter plays it out of her phone. And whenever I hear it, it just puts me in a panicked state. I just want to leave that room because it's having an effect on me. It's probably because I come from a generation where I remember better music and music that was produced in different ways, but it really does have a disturbing effect on me. If I hear it on the radio, if I walk into a shop and that stuff's playing, it just makes me very agitated and very uneasy. And that, of course, is the intention, but it's being aimed now at young people, so-called Gen Z, which my daughters belong to.
Yeah.
And because they've got no yardstick to compare it to anything else, it sounds great to them. It's the soundtrack to their youth. They don't see anything wrong with it. And that's the generation that the controllers have got in their crosshairs. They always want the young people. They're after young hearts, souls, and minds. And they've been doing that for decades.
And this is one of the reasons that that I take a big interest in, apart from my introduction and how I became involved with you and my own interest in the music industry. What I am concerned about now is I'm no longer, I am a parent, but I'm also now a grandparent of kids in that Gen Z demographic that you just mentioned.
Right.
And, you know, they love their music and I've encouraged that with them, Mark. You know, I mean, they've heard me play music. They've heard their parents play music a lot. And I definitely now I'm very, very concerned about, you know, how they're going to be impacted by this. But you can understand, again, getting back to the genius of these guys, they know full well that they're targeting this particular group because they're the most impressionable. And they're going to carry those ideas and those memories that they had when they were teenagers, particularly in that coming of age time. They're going to carry those with them. I mean, we've done it ourselves. And I guess all we can hope is at some point in time, while they'll probably participate in this and enjoy it, that at some point in time they do come to some sort of an awakening about it, you know, because it is really frightening. It really is. And it's not just obviously the sounds in terms of the change of the musical frequencies. You've got the oral and the visual thing now. Back in my day, back in the 60s, of course, we didn't have all of these videos. You would see your artists in concert, but you didn't have videos. And, of course, the introduction of MTV and the use of videos to augment the music, that changed the whole dynamic again as well. So you're getting, and of course now you've got the internet with the younger generation, so they're getting it on TV, they're getting it from all of these different sources. I just wanted to quickly quote, Mark, before we're going to be finishing up in a few more minutes, but I'm just going to take a quick quote from one of your books. Artists are pre-selected and groomed by the industry and placed at the top of the game as required. In the same way that presidents and prime ministers aren't elected, they're selected, so it is with A-list artists. It's not by merit of their artistic talent that musicians rise to the top, certainly not in the 2010s anyway, but by a measure of how willing they are to be completely manipulated and puppeteered by the hidden hand. Public opinion is irrelevant since most consumers sadly follow whatever puppets they're given and are told are the next big thing without exercising any discernment on their part. Again, I pull that out because that actually speaks to not just people who respond to music. It pretty much sort of speaks to how most people respond to not just music, but what our politicians tell us, what our media tells us, and everything. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I'm quite happy with that quote. I'd forgotten all about it, but I think it sums things up very well. It's discernment or the lack of discernment. People just take whatever's served up to them without question. We've seen this the last 3 years with all these ridiculous dictates that have come out and all these orders to behave in these very bizarre ways, which are actually harmful to us and our families. But most people have done it because it comes from an authority source and people aren't used to questioning. They're not used to exercising that discernment. So in the same way that you'll get a new artist served up to you and they'll say, oh, this person is the next big thing, this is the next big singer, people just accept that and they think, oh, well, I guess she's going to be big then. When you get these things coming out in the news, in current affairs, and they say, oh, this is happening, so we've got to respond in this way, people just go along with it as well. And what needs to happen is people just need to engage conscious thought and actually question these things, critical thought. We've all been societally mind-controlled. As I said earlier, we've all been societally mind-controlled and conditioned over long periods, actually most of our lives, and we've seen that playing out in real time over the past 3 years.
Mark, we've got a couple more minutes, but just so I want to ask you this question. The entertainment industry and the COVID WEF, that's the World Economic Forum agenda, what does the pop culture industry or the entertainment industry tell us about the wider globalist agenda? You know, I mean, isn't culture now being weaponized? It probably has been for some time, but isn't it now becoming more or increasingly weaponized?
Yeah, it always has been. And this is the main theme of my Musical Truth 3 book, which was a direct response to the COVID era. And I think that book and what is in it confirms everything that was in the previous two books. My assertion that mainstream artists and anyone in the public light, any household name, is utterly controlled. And when there's an agenda to be pushed, artists and anyone in the public light, any household name, is utterly controlled. And when there's an agenda to be pushed, such as COVID, such as what we're seeing now, climate change and the push towards central bank digital currencies and all of this, these celebrities are used to popularize these ideas. And they'd be instructed to do it. They've got handlers, they've got managers who tell them what to say, and they come out and make these statements and prop up these agendas because they're owned.
Mark, we've got about 45 seconds to go. Just give us a bit of a rundown on where people can go to, first of all, support your crowdfund campaign and also to find out more information about your work.
Okay, so I have a crowdfunder link. Hopefully you can put the exact link in the show notes if you're able to do that.
Yes.
And if people are able to donate to help me get to Australia, that would be gratefully appreciated. Other than that, all my work resides at djmarkdevlin.com, which is my main hub website. My books are on Amazon, but you can get them from me and also a friend of mine in Australia directly if you would like to do that. And everything else, links to my YouTube channel and podcasts and all the rest of it,